This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
I'm Abe.
Yeah, you're Abe.
You're Joe.
I'm Joe. And the number to call is 231-8187. Now, I want everybody to pay attention because this is, I think, an unusually powerful show. We're going to be talking about TriMet. We're going to be talking with the head of the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union very shortly. I'm going to tell you some of the conversation I had with a representative from Troutdale about his ideas to improve the board at TriMet. And then we're going to go to Jeff Gianola from Channel 6 KOIN, who did an incredibly good job of exposing some really questionable practices.
Yeah, credit where it's due. He did a really nice job.
Yeah.
And we make no bones about criticizing commercial media. And usually local TV news is down near the bottom, but in this case, he did a real nice job.
He came through. He showed us all what could be done with the local news shows. And I really want to praise him for that. And we're going to go to him the second half of the show. So those of you who want to call us to talk about your experiences with TriMet or talk about your ideas about TriMet, I'm going to really ask you to sort of write down what you want to say and make it or just kind of organize it in your mind so that it's brief. Because one of the hardest things to do is a show where we have a lot of calls coming in and where we have guests and it's all a three-ring circus and we want to get as much out as possible.
Indeed. So please keep your calls concise, keep them well organized, keep them topical.
And I want to remind you all that today's the last day to get your ballots in. You have to take them right down there to the Multnomah County voting place. It's 11th and Morrison.
Yeah. Yep. Or to the library.
Or to the library. You can still go to the library.
The library. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you should really do that. It's really important. As you know, fluoridation is on the ballot. Children's programs and so on. The Children's Initiative is on the ballot. And a measure by Metro to improve the parklands that were purchased with your money not so long ago.
Right.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about TriMet. First of all, TriMet began as an agency incorporating the old Rose City Transit and the old Blue Bus system that went out to the counties. It was a very hopeful effort to create a rational approach to mass transit in the area. It has developed the MAX lines, and it has spent a lot of money. Originally, it was going to go clear out to the far ends of Clackamas County, to the far ends of Washington County, bring people into the center, make transportation affordable and easy and public and not involve automobiles. But recently, TriMet has undergone various service cuts. There's very great disgruntlement among the employees of the organization who are organized in a labor union, the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union. In general, I think it's fair to say that there are some really major issues with TriMet, both with its governance. Remember, the board is selected by the governor, keeps it pretty far away from you and me, and with the service and with the fares. So we're going to talk a lot about all of that, and we do want to hear from you, 231-8187. But we also want to give opportunity, and I think this is really important, for the president of the union to talk to us. We're also going to, I'm going to tell you about a conversation I had with a representative from, Chris Gorsek from Gresham, who had some ideas about improving the board at TriMet and has some criticisms of TriMet. And we're going to go out to Jeff Gianola from Coin 6.
That's right.
So it's a big show.
It's busy.
Busy. So we got a caller. Should we take the
caller? Sure.
This is Joanne, make it fast.
Oh, slow it down. The country is going to... you know, Joanne had Randy Lennon on her program, mm-hmm. and I'm an elder, and he didn't like what I said, and he said,
Joanne.
Shut up, Joe, and let
okay.
me finish. I don't like your corporate employee, Gianola, on cable. I don't like what's happening on cable.
Okay, thank you. What is that about?
She just said it.
Okay,
she doesn't like a commercial reporter on KBOO.
Hey, he's a reporter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does the news. All right. I think she's reacting to other issues around KBOO, but this is not relevant. Now, TriMet is an interesting agency in that it is, like many transit agencies in modern times, an attempt to incorporate a whole host of services. One of the things that TriMet does, though it's not really made public as its primary goal, is to serve through its light rail system the development of whole areas of the city and county.
Yes.
Counties.
I remember when Sam Adams was running for his second term.
Yes.
He came on this program, and we talked to him about the streetcar. And I was confused about the policy and the philosophy of driving streetcar development. I said, why not run a streetcar line up Powell or up MLK or out Broadway or out Hawthorne, places like that? And he said, no, the philosophy was to use the light rail line to drive new development rather than to use it to service existing population centers.
Right, and the same for the trolley. Now, let's be clear. The trolley system is owned by the city.
Excuse me. The trolley is what I was referencing.
Yeah, the trolley system is owned by the city. TriMet runs the light rail lines. It runs the bus system and is not the same as the trolley system. It also runs the, I can't remember what it's called, the thing that goes from Wilsonville to Beaverton.
The WES.
The WES, W-E-S,
yes.
Which has not been a great success.
Yeah, I've seen it cross the street a number of times with not very many people on it.
Yeah, so and this is all part of the problem. We're going to, I think right now, we're going to try to talk with the head of the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union, hopefully Bruce. Oh, Bruce, are you there?
I'm here, Joe. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to call you Bruce, if that's okay.
That is perfectly fine. Thank you.
Good morning, Bruce.
All right. That's my air partner, Abe. Now, TriMet has been cutting services, and including cutting fareless square, and basically started out as a very ambitious program, and it's been reduced and reduced and reduced. And you guys are engaged in a struggle around the contract. I would like you briefly to tell us what it is you're desiring to have and what it is that TriMet is offering you and what are the implications for the agency. And then I'd actually like you to talk about TriMet itself.
Well, first off, we want living wages for equal employment. We want good working conditions. And also, you know, we want a safe environment for our employees to work in.
Uh-huh. But aren't you engaged in kind of an argument about around retirement benefits and health care?
We are, and that's always an issue on the table.
So I'm going to ask you directly. I don't know if you can respond to this because of your situation as head of the union, but what's the deal with TriMet? Can you explain some of the issues and some of the ways you think things might be improved?
Well, we have many issues within TriMet. Part of the issues is that they continue to hide things from the public and the employees, and including us, the union.
What do you mean hide things?
They're just not upfront about it. They're not transparent about it. One of the latest things is we just got notice on the judge fined them $5,000. Or not revealing all the information in one of our fatal accidents.
That's interesting. Hmm. And there was also a case where, a civil liberties case, where a lawyer with one of the major law firms here in town was told essentially to shut up on the platform. When she objected, they gave her a 30-day exclusion, and she got a lawyer from the American Civil Liberties Union, and the whole case was stalled long enough to make it moot. That is, the 30 days had already passed. And the judge basically threw that one out. So it seems like TriMet is a bit, to me, it seems a little bit rigid. It seems a little bit like it's defensive rather than aggressively attempting to provide transportation for the general public. I'm wondering how you see the agency at this time.
I don't see it the same as I have in the past 20 years. I've been employed here 20 years, and I do not see it going in a positive direction for the community or the employees.
Can you be specific?
More stressful situations. They've tightened our schedules. They've reduced our breaks. Multiple things. Working conditions are all, they've tightened everything down.
So you're saying you're seeing a decline in working conditions, in some of the traditional perks that you've enjoyed. You're engaged in a battle right now over the status of long-term retiree health benefits. Yet, the TriMet board, without public input, voted itself a raise. What's the feeling among the rank and file about that issue?
Well, obviously, very disappointed. You know, the thing is the frontline employees are the ones that keep TriMet rolling, and we have managers and an executive that really don't make decisions there that affect what's going on within the system.
I should be more accurate. The board did not vote itself a raise, but voted to give raises to the executives, to the management.
That would be correct.
Okay.
Okay, so in a nutshell, the union's position, as I understand it, is that you want decent retirement benefits and you want decent health care through the life of employees. Is that right?
Correct.
And
safe working conditions
as well. And better working conditions. Now, TriMet so far has been relatively intransigent. Is that fair to say?
I'm sorry?
Has TriMet been eager to comply with your requests, or how are they treating you guys?
No, not really. We're struggling, just like everybody else is, to get information through them. Information that we requested back in November is still trickling in.
So is it fair to say that it's the management there is fairly closed and not open to anybody looking at the information that's available?
Yeah, I think that's a good synopsis of it. They don't want to be scrutinized as their employees are.
So this and larger picture, from the point of view of you guys in who drive the buses and you guys who repair the buses and so on, what's going on at TriMet?
Very disappointed workforce, I guess, is an easy way to size that up. Very disappointed in the management and the lack of communication that we receive through them. Lack of input that they want to take from the employees that are actually out there seeing the things go on, whether it be maintenance, running our trains, operating our buses.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners about TriMet and about the disagreement between the between the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union and the management of TriMet?
Well, I'd just like everybody to know that our employees are out there to service the public, and that's what we will continue to do. We appreciate all the support we've gained recently within the media, the public inputs, and all other avenues that they've become a part of.
Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
That's it.
All right, thanks very much for talking with us, Bruce.
All right.
You take care now.
All right, bye.
Well, so it's interesting, you know, here's the union engaged in a labor struggle with TriMet, and when we talk later with Jeff Gianola, who did an excellent, excellent job of researching and confronting the management of TriMet about hidden salary raises and so on. It seems like the struggle that TriMet is engaged in really does put enormous pressure on the bus drivers and the train operators. I have to say one thing. I actually for 2 years drove a school bus.
Really?
Yeah. I also drove commercial trucks, but
they put you in charge of young children?
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was scary. This is a relatively easy job. Children, obviously, more controllable in most ways than passengers on a regular bus. Stops are less frequent. But you're dealing with traffic with a relatively large vehicle, not nearly as big as a big regular bus. And it's a hard job. Every morning, every afternoon, I would drive this route. The route would take about 1 to 2 hours each time. And traffic was horrible. People operated irrationally. There were constant concerns about the safety of the people I was carrying, the young people. I consider driving a commercial vehicle, and particularly driving a vehicle that's designed to carry people, a very, very hard and very scary job. A lot of tension.
Well, indeed. And not to mention the fact that many people rely on your solid performance. I mean, if you screw up, People can get hurt and die, or they won't make it to work on time, or wherever it is that they're trying to get.
Yeah. So I'm interested in hearing from people about their experiences with TriMet, both good and bad, because I want to make something clear here. I consider a good transit system a key to a number of issues for the region, the metropolitan region. Number one, it reduces the poisonous gases from automobiles and so forth. Number two, it's an efficient way to get people from here to there. And number three, it is absolutely the most rational way of dealing with people's transportation needs in the city area.
Yes, and I think there's something that we should note here as well. This conflict right now between management and the union at TriMet mirrors those that have been happening in recent years all over the country in both the public and private sectors. What you see is you have an agency, whether it's something like TriMet, administered by the government, or the private sector, that has a budget situation. And usually the answer that is pointed to is that workers in some way must make sacrifices and settle for a salary, a benefit package, a standard of living that is less than it was before. And this is part and parcel of the decline of the American working class. So it's important, not just because of the importance of the role that TriMet workers play in our regional transportation apparatus, but because it's important that we maintain a healthy working class that can go out and spend money and drive the economy.
Yeah, you know, since you mentioned that, I think one of the things we learned in high school was that the economy runs by the basis of supply and demand.
Right.
Well, until you make demand increase, you can't have a healthy economy. Cutting wages cuts demand inevitably. People don't buy things that they can avoid buying. And yeah, it hurts the economy, and it hurts the working people that make those things. And it drives working jobs out of the country and into places where workers have no rights.
Yeah. And the empirical evidence over many, many decades of industrial capitalism clearly concludes that the overall economy does better when more people have more money to spend. When a tiny minority at the top concentrates wealth in its hands, the economy as a whole does not do so well.
Well, we have a caller, 231-8187. BT, go ahead.
Good morning.
Yeah, Joe and Abe, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you? What's on your mind?
You know, the main point about all this is, you know, I've been listening to reports for the last year as TriMet cuts service, a lot of buses, and, of course, the people who get screwed are a lot of working class neighborhoods and et cetera to take them to work centers. And I don't know how many of you guys acknowledge that the MAX is just sucking up many, many millions of dollars. In fact, I think about 5 miles of a light rail line costs $1 billion now. You know how many buses you can have instead?
Don't know, but I can imagine.
Yeah, quite a few. Quite a few, and you can have more frequent service. I think more people might ride if a bus came by the corner every 5 or 10 minutes instead of 15 or a half hour, and more routes. So, I don't know, it's just love affair with light rails. If that is the main project for all the new urbanism, you guys will just screwed yourselves.
Yeah, I think.
Is there any more acknowledgement of that? I heard someone on cable a couple weeks ago was playing a pre-recorded report on TriMet and trying to blame, you know, where their money problems, and he tracked it down to maybe $1 million in bonuses. Well, I didn't like the idea of the bonuses, but just $1 million, a mile of light rail line is costing about $220 million. There's where the money's going.
Well, and of course, I think people need to understand that light rail serves two functions. It is a transportation system for people, but it's also a development tool for enriching or increasing the population in along the lines.
Which is helping fat cats, which I thought you guys hated.
I don't hate anybody. I'm a friendly kind of guy.
Hey, I'll call you again. I haven't called in a while, but I needed to do it this time.
Okay, I thank you very much for the call. Yeah, very shortly we're going to hear, I think we can take one more caller, but I think we're going to hear from Jeff Gianola from Coin6 News. First caller said, why are we getting people from the main media? When the main media does a good job of reporting, we will report what they report because we don't have their facilities and we don't have the options that they have. Let's go to one of our callers.
Yes, and we need to encourage them to continue to do good reporting. All right. Caller, good morning.
Hi. So I wanted to offer a little insight on how TriMet helps the public. About 3 years ago, Portland Public Schools closed Marshall High School, which geographically made no sense, but they were not going to close, you know, some of the nicer southeast schools that are in much more economically thriving and politically thriving neighborhoods. So the students in one of the most economically depressed areas of outer southeast take Powell, the bus line, the number 9,
right,
from all the way down to Franklin High School.
Yes.
Because Franklin's boundary goes all the way out to, I would say, past 92nd, 102nd now.
Uh-huh.
It used to, you know, only go to 72nd-ish.
Right.
In the outer southeast area. So there's a whole slew of children that are from, you know, on the lower end of the household income scale that rely on TriMet to get to and from school.
Yes.
And my son takes TriMet every day, the number 9, out Powell, to get home, because we were in the old Marshall district. And if we didn't have TriMet, I don't know how he'd get home.
Okay, can you quickly make your point, because we're going to go out to Jeff Fianola.
Oh, that was just, my point was that, you know, it is a vital
service
for public use, especially our children, because there's no high school bus system anymore.
Right, of course. And thank you very much for the call. We're going to try to reach out to Jeff Fianola at this time.
Okay, well, we'll go to him when we're able to get him.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, April.
Oh.
Hey, hi, are you there?
Yeah, I am. I just wanted to call in because I'm a lifelong TriMet rider.
Uh-huh.
I would say up until 2 years ago, I rode TriMet because that's what I chose. I know how to drive. I don't want a car. It's bad for the environment and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But the last 2 years, I ride TriMet because right now I don't have a choice.
Uh-huh.
And I think that has a lot to do with what the union president was talking about, the working conditions. I've noticed that the drivers, they drive at what I consider unsafe speeds. And I think it's in order to get, you know, to where they have their break, because they don't really have scheduled built-in breaks. I mean, if they don't make up the time, they get behind because they aren't allowed any extras.
Huh. I don't know anything about that, but that's an interesting point. I do know that they're on a tight schedule, and I do know that supposedly it's been designed to take into account traffic, but obviously traffic varies enormously.
No, it hasn't. And if they get behind, they just don't get a break.
Ah.
Ooh. So what I would like to hear people talk about is how riders can actually partner with the union and fight for what both of us need.
Well, that's a very interesting point, and I guess we'll hear from other people on that.
Right.
We're gonna try to reach out again to Gianola, who's oddly enough at his kids, not oddly, but he's at his kids' school judging a science fair. We're hoping to reach him.
Okay. Well, thanks.
You know, thank you for the call. Really.
Bye-bye.
I'm just glad kids still do science.
Well, it's amazing that kids still do science the way the schools are being cut.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. I'm Abe, and you're Joe.
I'm Joe, and this is Chris on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hey, I just had a couple of quick, succinct, hopefully, questions for you.
Okay.
One, what do TriMet drivers make?
I don't know.
And just in general, or per year salary, I know that there are benefits, and that's another question, but what do they make?
Okay.
And is anyone at TriMet management suggesting that they take a pay cut? That's one question. And the other one is, I've just traveled around the United States this winter, been to so many cities, and we have the most expensive bus system I encountered.
Yeah,
I wondered if maybe Jeff can address both of those.
Well, hopefully if we can get a hold of him, he will be able to address that. And it's really a good point. He did work which compared comparable city areas. I think Denver was one example, in terms of cost, in terms of service, in terms of fleet, in terms of all the factors you're asking about. And we need to reach him.
Okay, that's great. And also, if anyone could actually tell me what a TriMet bus driver makes.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
I apologize. I should have asked the union guy while he was on the air, and I didn't.
No, you were having a problem making him succinct and intelligible anyway. So,
well,
I
have a problem making me succinct and intelligible, let me tell you.
Anyway, you guys, try and get a hold of Jeff, and
okay.
Thank you for your efforts.
You bet. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
He also posed a question, is anyone proposing a wage cut for TriMet drivers and other union workers? And I believe the answer is no. They're talking about reducing legacy health benefits to retirees,
yeah,
which is a tough sell, I think. Why shouldn't somebody have decent health care in their retirement years?
Well, you know, I was talking with a commercial talk guy, Lars Larson.
Oh, your favorite guy.
My favorite guy, the short man with the big gun. And he essentially was arguing that, hey, Nobody should get decent wages if they do ordinary labor jobs because it costs too much. He doesn't see the idea of supply and demand at all. He just sees that government is too expensive.
Oh, my. Now, see, that, in a nutshell, that encapsulates how far we have gotten collectively from the values that gave rise to the union movement and the labor movement of the started in the late 1800s. That movement said, essentially, that a hard day's work is inherently noble and worthy and deserving of a decent wage on which you can raise a family. Doesn't matter what you do. Everybody deserves a decent wage. And Lars apparently doesn't buy into that anymore.
Well, no,
if he ever did.
I don't think he, how shall I put this? His economics is very fundamentalist.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, indeed. So let's go back to the phones, shall we? David, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I just want to bring to mind to the listeners this morning about the nature of how we organize ourselves here in the United States, as to when you think about all the streetcars and all the light rail, as we call it now, that was in place in the early 20th century and was all torn out in the mid-20th century and now is being put back in at what, how much more cost?
Yes.
It is a prime example of how absurd we are here and how we run our country. That's all I got to say.
Well, hey, thank you very much for the call. And you're absolutely right. There was a disinvestment in rail infrastructure in the middle of the last century. There's, of course, the famous example of the... Hello. There was the famous example of the dismantling of the extensive light rail network that serviced the greater Los Angeles metropolitan area. It was bought up and shut down by a coalition of Firestone Tire and Rubber, Standard Oil, and General Motors because they wanted people to drive their cars rather than ride the streetcar. So I understand we've got Jeff Gianola standing by.
Is that right? Jeff, are you there?
And try your call again.
Oh.
What?
Looks like we had him, we lost him. We'll get him. We'll get him eventually. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. We just had a caller mention the disinvestment in rail infrastructure that happened in the mid-20th century. Places like Los Angeles was the example I brought up.
Right. Now they're rebuilding the system.
At a much larger cost. Yeah, he made that point as well.
Yeah.
So go ahead, please.
Well, where are we on the Gianola thing?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
We just tried to get him and couldn't.
We'll let's go to our next caller then.
Okay. Who's up next, Steve? Steve, who's up next, sir? Jeff.
Jeff.
Good morning.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
I can hear you.
Hey.
Okay, here I am. I'm glad we got that.
I'm glad you did that. This is Jeff Gianola. I'm going to give a little promo, KOIN News Channel 6. You did a series of interviews that really impressed me, and I wanted you, first of all, to kind of recap what you discovered. And I'll leave it open, kind of an open question. I'll start out with just, you know, what is the situation of our system? How does it compare with other places in terms of wages, in terms of service, in terms of fares, and in terms of the compensation for the men at the top?
Well, I think that the top three things, I did a two-part series, and I sat down with TriMet General Manager Neil McFarland and asked some pretty tough questions. And but basically, you recall that last year when they were doing the budget, cutting service and raising fares because they said they had to fill a $12 million budget shortfall, unbeknownst to the public at the time, there were raises built in for TriMet executive managers and other non-union employees, and 70 of them making six-figure salaries, and there were some raises built in there.
Wait a minute, six-figure salaries?
70 people make six figures at TriMet?
Yes, and that's what we covered in our series. So I compared that with Denver, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Now, Denver, Colorado, that's a good comparison because Denver averages about the same weekday ridership as TriMet, a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
Average daily weekday ridership. Uh-huh. I think TriMet's at 308,000, Denver 328. But, of course, Denver's four times the geographic size of TriMet with a greater area to cover, so they're moving, you know, the people. And we found just 51 managers at Denver in that category. So we looked at comparing salaries with Denver executives and managers with salaries at TriMet and found some inconsistencies. Now, TriMet later argued, well, there were some other people that were paid more, including the general manager. And yes, but that's not the salaries. That's not what I compared in my story. I started comparing some of the people under the general manager. There's some pretty interesting discrepancies. And we asked, and I asked Neil McFarlane about that. And then we looked at the whole issue of why those fares were done in sort of a hidden manner. And McFarlane has gone on record apologizing for that and said, hey, we'll do better next time and we'll be more transparent. But it brings up that issue of trust and transparency. And then the second thing we looked at was, while they were doing all of this, you know, TriMet has now some of the highest fares in the country. Your last caller said that. And when you judge a transit agency, forget about executive salaries, forget about that. If it's so expensive, people can't ride it. You know, it's not mass transit anymore. And TriMet now has some of the highest fares in the entire country. And for what we pay, as Jonathan Oster, who I used in my story, said, we don't get the value for that fare. So in other words, if you pay $250 here in Portland for a fare, and you pay $250 in New York, at least in New York, you get to ride that fare longer. You get to go a distance, where here it expires after 2 hours, that $2.50 fare. So it's the value for the fare. And, you know, they're working right now to at least tack on another hour worth of transfer time here, saying, you know, so we looked at that, but then the main issue comes back to the transparency. And, you know, here's the other thing that was shocking to me, and in part two of this series we looked more at transparency. TriMet's one of the only transit agencies that we could find, major transit agencies, that doesn't have a citizens advisory committee permanent sitting overseeing the whole agency.
So there's no check on this sort of activity.
Well, that's what we wanted. Now, TriMet will argue, well, we have different committees for the budget, we have different, yeah, and they do. They have separate committees that the general manager or the TriMet board picks the people to be on those committees, which I said, that's not very transparent. But it's shocking that there's no CAC or oversight committee. And start looking at other websites of other transit agencies, and they will actually advertise for people to be on there. They will recruit people to be on there. They want people to be on their agency. There's even, if you go to New York City Transit, you'll see buttons on their website for transparency. I mean, everything. And when I asked him about that, he said, well, he finally conceded that the CAC.
This really, is McFarlane, right?
In Portland, he was describing that the CAC, a Citizens Advisory Committee, really is the role of the TriMet board. And then we went into, well, people would argue against that. And McFarlane's take on that is, hey, listen, they're citizens appointed by the governor to sit there to watch. But other transit agencies have transit boards, too, as well as the CAC.
Well, you know, you mentioned the board. Maybe you know Representative Chris Gorsuch.
I used him in my piece, yeah.
Yeah, and he is actually from the Troutdale area. He wants to see the board structure change. People may not know this, but the board, the total board, is appointed by the governor, with one position at least traditionally being a labor position, but not required to be. He wants to see two members of the board from the city of Portland, two members from each of the three counties served by TriMet, and one person appointed by the governor. And he thinks that would be a much more locally based and much more sympathetic kind of board. And I wonder what your hit on that was. And it seems to me that something needs to happen with that board, because it's so far removed from the people who use the system.
Well, Jonathan Oster, I keep quoting him from Opal, but Jonathan said, you know, there's only one TriMet board member who rides transit on a regular basis.
Really?
And he said that to him was more disturbing than whether it should be appointed locally. Now, keep in mind, these people are local people, and you know, they're very well-qualified people. They're appointed by the governor.
Yeah.
But the issue comes up, should they be appointed locally? You know, there's one idea that maybe Metro, since it encompasses, you know, all three counties of TriMet serves, maybe they should be appointed through Metro.
Well, in fact, Metro legally can, theoretically at least, take over TriMet.
they can, and then it was explained to me that they probably don't because there's these, well, you know what they call them in politics, poison pills. If that happens, then certain things, bond measures are due and things like that. And
yeah.
So it's almost impossible for them to take over, but you're absolutely right. They can take it over. But is it time, your question is it time for that board to look at that board? Should it be appointed more on a local level? And that's what a lot of people think, because here's an argument. Keep in mind, it's appointed by the governor, approved by the state senate, and I think as Chris Smith, who writes a wonderful blog called Portland Transport, told me, he said, what does a senator in Roseburg really know about, you know, what's going on with the transit in Portland, and vice versa? What would, you know, that would be like the Portland mayor making a decision on something down in Roseburg about their transit system.
Well, yeah, it just seems to me that the board, the way it's presented, the way it seems, is that whatever their well-intentioned nature, they're really not aware of exactly what the issues are for most of the riders in the system. I also noticed in your work that it was very hard for you to discover what were the raises that these executives got. I think you said they were buried in documents. Is that right?
Well, what we got, we had the documents. First of all, we got the documents of when those raises came of. We could only get the documents of the top 50 raises. So, in other words, the top 50 managers' raises for TriMet. And we had that in part two. We looked at some of the, you know, there's a 51% increase raise for someone in the legal department, I think, and
wow.
A 33% increase and a 22%. Now, TriMet, you know, argued, they later came out with their fact check on that and said, well, that's because that was a part-time position that went to this position. That's fine. I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, it's still, when it came out in the wash, it was a, you know, 51%.
Well, how much do these people make? I mean, you talk about six figures. Is a high sit? What? Give me some numbers.
Well, I think Neil McFarlane, the general manager, makes like $221,000 a year. And when you compare with other general managers across the country, that's not that out of line. But when you compare with some other key agencies that are, you know, that like Denver and some stuff, while the Denver general manager may be paid more than Neil, when you look at some of the second ones, like TriMet's deputy general manager. Now, TriMet has not had a second-in-command, a deputy general manager, for a number of years. Now, Neil McFarlane thinks that's an important position. We need that. And that's budgeted now at $208,000 a year. Well, in Denver, you know, four times that was a $165,000 position.
Well, that's quite a difference.
In similar positions in Denver that we compared to. And TriMet also had, when we went through this, also had a fair number of legal people in that management category, a fair number of legal people. And when I talked to TriMet about, compared to other transit agencies, when I talked to TriMet about that, they said that, well, they like to do a lot of in-house things more than other. Yet work is often farmed out to other. So it gets kind of murky. It really does. But I was more struck with the basic I walked away with, the thing that we're paying some of the highest fares and the issue of transparency with TriMet. And now this latest issue that Joseph Rose of the Oregonian just disclosed last night in the paper, but following that tragic accident, now comes word that in the civil suit for the people who lost loved ones in there, TriMet withheld key memos and stuff from the defense team. Disclosure, discovery. They didn't release those documents, and they were fined. And those, you know, you can't do that. And TriMet's argument was, well, they didn't specifically ask for emails, and the judge said, where have you been the last 10 years? The federal judge said that's discovery, is emails and everything. So that's interesting, and it comes back to that whole thing of transparency. And, you know, they say they want to be more transparent, but you've got to live it. You've got to do it. And now you have this labor negotiation coming up, and even the Oregonian wrote a wonderful editorial back in March about TriMet over these raises, the way they seem to be hidden, saying you now have a trust and credibility problem heading into this labor negotiation. So no matter what you say, there's because of your past history on transparency, there's an issue with credibility and trust. And I thought it was a very good editorial on that issue.
We don't always, in fact, we rarely find ourselves in agreement with the Oregonian, but I think everybody, and this is what I'm my impression, everybody in the semi-public or public sphere, whether they're in the reporting business or in the advocacy business or whatever, is deeply disappointed with and dismayed by the policies of TriMet. It's seen by many, many people as neither transparent nor doing the services that it ought to be doing, particularly with the fares it's charging. And I just wonder, is there any way to bring it under control? Do you have any thoughts about how TriMet might be more responsive? I know Gorsuch talks about having the board members appointed at a more local level, but what is your thinking, Jeff?
I think this transparency is key, and I think someone in charge of TriMet or someone or the board really has to make a commitment to that and open up the doors and let some fresh air in. I mean, you know, sometimes an agency needs that, and it might be time to take a really hard, critical look, and maybe it's time for a board appointed by some local people or some local people to take a critical independent, there's the key word, independent look at TriMet now to say, you know what, there's a lot of things TriMet does well, but there's a lot of issues that have come up lately, and maybe it's time to take an independent look at that and see, you know, if we can kind of open up that door and get some fresh air in there, especially when it comes to this transparency. TriMet right now is very vocal about the union health care and how that's going to really hurt TriMet down the road financially.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, that issue comes up. Okay, how much of that can we believe if we've had some other problems where this trust issue comes up? Can we believe that? And if that's the case, then, it's time then that... Are we putting the public right now? Are you using the public as a pawn with the high fares and stuff? Here's my other issue with these fares. I know I'm kind of rambling here a little bit.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Second cup of coffee, but here's my other issue. There was a $20 million contingency fund that they took those raises from, about $900,000.
Wait a minute, they took the raises from contingency funds?
Yes.
That's why it was hidden. It was a line item. There's no such thing really as a contingency fund. It's a line item in a budget called contingency.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, TriMet threw $10 million more into that, so it's $20 million, and they took those raises from there. Now, the way I understand it, under Oregon law, that contingency line item, you don't have to explain things that you're using that for as clearly as you do on specific other items. And so that's how that stayed sort of out of public view for a while. And my direct question to Neil McFarland was, okay, forget about the raises and forget about that, but if you were able to take that out of the contingent, why not take a few million out for fare relief?
Sure. Or to pay those employees' health care costs.
And that was, they say that's not what that money can be used for, but it can be used for those raises, and that's what I think the public doesn't quite understand, or I don't understand, is how can you differentiate between those two things? You know, what that money is used for. Now, they did, after all this came to light, one of the board members said, listen, we've got to come up with a mitigation fund for low-income people or poor people to actually ride the bus because it's getting so expensive, and those tickets would be distributed through Salvation Army and other social services.
Wait a minute. Now, the fares are too high for ordinary people to use so you go giving it to charity to give to these people?
Well, that's one of TriMet's, that was one of their criticisms of my report, because I talked to a guy back east, a transit expert, and I explained this, and he said, hold it, stop. He said exactly what you said. He said, if you have to have a mitigation fund so low-income people can ride your transit system, you have a problem with your transit system.
You have a fare problem.
And I said, well, that's the situation. Now, trying to defend that, saying, well, the board member came up with it. Okay, that is a great idea if it's that expensive, but do we need to look at the root problem if we're having to start funds so people can ride the bus?
Well, look, wouldn't it make sense? I mean, they went to a single fare, whether you go 7 blocks or 7 miles, wouldn't it make more sense to have 2 fare levels at least so that people, particularly older people or people with issues about driving, so that someone could go from their home with adequate bus service or adequate rail service and to the shopping mall or the store or whatever and back, and not have to pay the huge fare that would that's involved if you go from Hillsborough clear out to Gresham. Same fare.
You know, there are some breaks for the senior. You know, TriMet does have the, you know, the senior fares and the senior pass. Our TriMet monthly pass is $100.
Wow.
We compare TriMet. I asked Neil McFarland specifically, compared that pass to Denver. Now, Denver's Metro pass is $79 a month. That covers roughly the geographic area of TriMet, what TriMet covers. Now, in Denver's four times the size of TriMet. So there's passes that are more expensive in Denver, but that's when you're riding, you know, Denver covers over 2,400 square miles transit, Portland 575.
So that's quite a difference.
That's a difference. So the TriMet argued with me my story was inaccurate because, but as I said on the news, we're comparing that geographic size that it covers. Here's the other thing. Denver also still has the free, you know how we used to have the free zone downtown?
Yeah,
Denver also still has the free mall buses for their mall. They call that the mall downtown, and that's it. So you're getting, once again, you come back to the value for your fare. What are you getting? And TriMet admits, TriMet doesn't try to hide that their fares, but they will, but they say that part of that reason is we need those fares because, you know, we've had a downturn in the economy, and they rely on a payroll tax and the fare box to fund TriMet.
Uh-huh.
And the payroll tax with the economy means not as many people work, and TriMet does have a legitimate argument over that because that's not, you know, that's not being fed into the coffers like it was. But as Jonathan Oster from Opal says, TriMet's also underestimated, and he feels they've done that purposely, on what those fares will be to sort of, what he calls, not manufacture, but sort of create a budget crisis at the expense of the riders as they try to battle this union labor issue. So, you know,
there's
a lot of messages out there, but the bottom line comes back, you know, the credibility and trust from TriMet, since it doesn't seem like they've been so forthright in some of their dealings.
Well, Jeff, is there anything else you want to add? Because we're going to move on.
No, that's about it. I got to go back and judge this science fair.
Listen, we really appreciate your being on, and I want to say something that's really important. It's rare, I'm sorry to say, that local news shows have real content. What you've done here, I hope, is a beginning of something that all three or four local stations will do, which is real reporting. And I want to congratulate you out there at Channel 6.
Well, thanks, and I will be the first to say we sometimes have dropped the ball in the local media, not being tough enough, not following the, you know, how it should be. And I know a lot of your listeners will say, well, that's the corporate media, and there's some there's valid arguments with that. But I would tell you there are people out there do what I do that it's a personal thing with them, and it's a journalistic thing with them, with no thought to who the man is and just trying to do the story.
But anyway, Jeff, I really want to thank you for being with us, and
okay,
hopefully we'll talk again.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Jeff Gianola, KOIN-TV. You can watch his reporting on TriMet if you're at KOIN.com. Just search for TriMet. It'll take you right there. All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio writer and global justice activist, Aaron Dottie Roy, speaks on reimagining the world. At 10, here Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a look at the aftermath of the Bangladesh garment factory fire that cost the lives of over 1,100 people, mostly young women. And we hear excerpts from Genetic Roulette, a documentary on the dangers of eating genetically modified foods. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host Demi Roberts and Media Rights present Refugee Dreams Revisited as part of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. This special is hosted by Margaret Cho, very, very funny person.
Very and, funny person.
Yes, and focuses on the experiences of Southeast Asian refugees in Portland. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Sarah Margolis-Pineo, associate curator at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, about the exhibition Object Focus, The Bowl. All this
the
and
bowl.
More, The Bowl, coming up on your community-supported radio station, KBOO.
Yeah, and we're talking about TriMet and TriMet fairs and the way in which the members of organized labor are treated and the incredibly, I think, high wages of the people at the top of TriMet. And we do want to hear from you. 231-8187.
Before we go to the phones,
yeah,
I just got to say what a head-scratcher this is. In a town known for its engaged and politically aware citizenry, why a public agency would vote itself raises in the dark, in secret.
Well,
it's sort of beggar's belief.
And it really is. The wage increases were buried amongst many, many other documents. It wasn't right out there.
No.
It had to be researched.
No. And let me go on the record also as saying, I understand why a manager of a large and complex agency like TriMet would earn a fairly significant salary. I'm not quibbling with that. What I'm quibbling with here is the fact that these raises, A, seem to be coming at the expense of fare increases, and B, also seem to be justified in the minds of TriMet management, whereas paying retiree health benefits is not.
Yeah, it does seem, to me, it seems very, very unfair and certainly raises some interesting questions about what TriMet is and how it serves us. Already we know that the light rail lines are essentially a development tool that's used by the community building things. And already we know that there is real resistance in Clackamas County and elsewhere to these lines. That I happen to disagree with. But we don't see a great deal of sympathy or concern for the local people who have to use or want to use or should be using the transportation system that is public.
Let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
Who do we have? Vernon, good morning. Or Verna.
Good morning, Abe.
Vernon, sorry.
Good morning, Joe. I want to bring a breath of fresh air by contrasting TriMet with our local system down here in Corvallis.
Okay.
We decided to follow the model of Island Transit up in Washington State. We've gone fare-free.
Wow.
We've decided that the cost of buses should be borne in our taxes because everyone benefits by getting cars off the road.
Uh-huh.
And so we have a very popular, well-supported system. It costs nothing to ride it, so it's – and now we're looking at the next phase of development. We're hoping to generate a system of jitneys.
Small buses.
Yeah, and unrouted buses. They're using modern communication, you can have a demand-driven system where the correct size vehicle is where it's needed to carry the people who want to get where they're going. Theoretically, it could be quicker to pick up your cell phone and call a jitney than it is to find your car in a parking lot.
That's interesting.
It can be done. We're not sure that America is the best place to model it because there are so many cars in the way, but we desperately need to fix that problem, and jitneys are one solution that could work really well. We already have the dial-a-bus service for seniors here, and for people who are disabled. It's just a matter of making that dial-a-bus for everyone.
No, I think that's really interesting. You know, years ago, and I still believe this, I took a look at San Francisco, at Seattle, and at Vancouver, British Columbia. They use trolley buses. That's an electrified bus line with a bus that has rubber tires that can move across lanes and so on. And I wondered why Portland, which used to have this back in the up till through the 50s, why the heck we haven't experimented with that. Sandy Boulevard, for example, would be an ideal route for that. So would Hawthorne's and a number of other streets, particularly where routes are always permanent. And yet they don't even consider that. So I don't know. I just think it's an agency that's is limited in its perspective, and this in the midst of a difficult economic downturn and fares going up. I just see people being forced into their automobiles rather than being able to use the transit system. So I don't know.
We're on to bicycles. Hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, there's always bicycles. All right.
All right.
Thanks for the call, man. 231-8187.
Should we go one more?
I think we
all
got
right.
time.
Who's up? Dave. Good morning.
Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Kenny,
you're on the air.
Hello.
Oh, he's not.
Well, there's something there, but it's not Kenny.
Okay, well, look, first of all, we're running out of time. I want to remind people, get your ballots in. You now have to deliver them by hand to the libraries or to the Multnomah County Elections Office at 11th and Morrison Street. If you, whatever your opinions on the three issues on the ballot and the various candidates, it's really important that you participate. This is an important election, deciding what your water system is going to be like and whether children are going to get certain benefits. Anyway, this is KBOO, and we will be with you, and we want you to stay tuned for the excellent programming that we have.
See you next week.
From those nets to Tiananmen Square, it's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
Tune in on Wednesday, May 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. for a live broadcast from Portland State University of a panel discussion on the Portland Women's Movement. We'll hear from women involved in a 1980 lawsuit charging Oregon's university system with discriminating against women. That's May 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on KBOO. To 8:30 p.m. for a live broadcast from Portland State University of a panel discussion on the Portland Women's Movement. We'll hear from women involved in a 1980 lawsuit charging Oregon's university system with discriminating against women. That's May 22nd from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on KBOO.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, writer and global justice activist Arundhati Roy speaks on reimagining the world. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a look at the aftermath of the Bangladesh garment factory fire that cost the lives of over 1,100 people, mostly young women. And we hear excerpts from Genetic Roulette, a documentary on the dangers of eating genetically modified foods. At 11 on stage in studio, Demay Roberts and Media Rights present Refugee Dreams Revisited as part of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. This special is hosted by Margaret Cho and focuses on the experiences of Southeast Asian refugees in Portland. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Sarah Margolis Pinheiro, associate curator at Museum of Contemporary Craft, about the exhibition Object Focus, The Bowl. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
The first step towards reimagining a world gone terribly wrong would be to stop the annihilation of those who have a different imagination, an imagination that is outside of capitalism as well as communism, an imagination which has an altogether different understanding of what constitutes happiness and fulfillment.
That's Arundhati Roy, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Arundhati Roy, Reimagining the World. The news item was brief and buried in the back pages. The headline, India, Maoist Ambush Patrol Killing 7 Soldiers. The report said the attack occurred in a rebel stronghold in Jharkhand state. Thousands of people have been killed in the past decade in violence involving Maoists, who claim they represent India's dispossessed, particularly indigenous tribal groups. Well, you may wonder, what's going on? I thought India's a democracy, the world's largest, right? Well, in India, the United States, and other countries, the actual functioning of democracy has largely been hollowed out. Yes, there are elections and people vote, but the nexus of decision-making power lies elsewhere. Corporations dominate the political process. With their fistful of dollars, they're able to exact outcomes that benefit them. As environmental destruction continues unabated, we must reimagine a different world, one in which people and the planet are more important than profits. Someone who's been writing about and speaking out on these topics is Arundhati Roy. She's a world-renowned writer and global justice activist. The New York Times calls her India's most impassioned critic of globalization and American influence. She's the author of many books, including The God of Small Things, The Checkbook and the Cruise Missile, Field Notes on Democracy, Listening to Grasshoppers, and Walking with the Comrades. She spoke at an event in Chicago organized by Haymarket Books and the Lannan Foundation. And now, Arundhati Roy.
So before I begin to read, I just thought we should talk about Iraq. What has happened to Iraq? Who has won what and who has lost? Certainly the people of Iraq have had a country destroyed and are at war against each other. The women of Iraq, who were amongst the most liberated, enlightened women in the world, scientists, poets, writers, all of them have been pushed back into the burqa, pushed back into their homes in some ways because of the danger that faces them. The people of America have lost. You know, there is a connection between foreclosures and funding a war. But George Bush, he's painting nowadays. Yeah. I just saw some paintings on the net. He's painting himself in the shower. He's painting his dog. And meanwhile, the fact that a million children died in Iraq before the sanctions, which Madeleine Albright said was hard but worth it, and the tens of thousands of people who have died and the continuing conflict in that entire region. Dick Cheney says if he was given the opportunity, he wouldn't think twice before doing it again. Tony Blair says that it was one of the best decisions he ever made in his life. And if he hadn't been part of the attack on Iraq, then the poor